A reading from the Holy Gospel according to John. Jesus wanted to set out for Galilee, but first he came upon Philip. "Follow me," Jesus said to him. Now Philip was from Bethsaida, the same town as Andrew and Peter. Philip sought out Nathanael and told him, "We have found the one Moses spoke of in the law, the prophets too, Jesus, son of Joseph, from Nazareth." Nathanael's response to that was, "Can anything good come from Nazareth?" And Philip replied, "Come and see for yourself." When Jesus saw Nathanael coming toward him, he remarked, "This man is a real Israelite. There is no guile in him." "How do you know me?" Nathanael asked him. "Before Philip called you," Jesus answered, "I saw you under the fig tree." "Rabbi," said Nathanael, "you are the Son of God. You are the King of Israel." Jesus responded, "Do you believe just because I told you I saw you under the fig tree? You will see much greater things than that." He went on to tell them, "I solemnly assure you, you shall see the sky opened and the angels of God ascending and descending on the Son of Man." The Gospel of the Lord. Can anything good come from Nazareth? On several occasions, I've been kidded with a similar question. Can anything good come from Alpha, meaning Alpha, Minnesota, the small rural village not far away from the farm in southwestern Minnesota where I grew up? And I took the question lightly as a jest about my origins. But once I was asked, "Can anything good come from the Bohunks?" I didn't take that so kindly. I thought it was a slur on my national identity, Bohemian. And I wished at the time I had to answer to that slur. I had known more about the saint we celebrate today, Saint John Nepomucene Neumann. He was born in western Bohemia to a pious couple, the father German, the mother Bohemian, not an unusual combination in that part of the country. His parents were strictly conservative Catholics, as most Catholics were in Bohemia, having faced centuries of the Hussite uprising and then later influences from Western Europe. I think he maybe have touched a little by Jansenism, which was quite widespread in Bohemia at the time, and even later among Bohemian immigrants, as it was among other nationalities. Later in life, John was bothered by what I would call scruples. We hear of them in the second reading in today's Office of Readings, where he's worried, writes to the Pope, concerned that he hadn't written in time concerning his real intentions with regard to the Diocese of Philadelphia, where he was bishop. Regardless of what his personal feelings were, he and the fact that he was a man of small stature, he never grew to more than 5'2", he was a man of huge intellect. At the age of 12, he went to the seminary at Bud Weiss, the nearest diocesan center and the home of what we in this country call Budweiser beer, and excelled at his studies. At the conclusion of his minor seminary studies, he went to the Charles University in Prague. And there, along with theology, which he again excelled, he also took science courses, loved mathematics, and took anatomy and biology. He did think of becoming a doctor before he decided to follow what he felt was his real calling, to be a priest. At Charles University, he was troubled by the theology being taught there, which was largely influenced by the Enlightenment. He certainly came in contact with new ideas that his more traditional Catholicism found difficult to embrace. Above all, he was adept at languages. He, of course, knew Czech and German, Latin, Hebrew, Greek, but he also picked up and became knowledgeable in Italian, English, French, Polish, Slovak, at least, and later when he arrived in this country, even in Gaelic, which is a notoriously difficult language to learn. He, according to story, learned it so well that one Irish lady who spoke no English and hadn't been, therefore, to confession in the United States for years, emerged from the confessional exclaiming in Gaelic, "Glory to God, we finally have an Irish priest." He used all these languages in his priesthood when he came to this country, but the reason he came to this country was that when he had finished his seminary studies, he was informed by his bishop that they didn't need any more priests in Budweis. There were simply too many priests. So on his own and with his own resources, he walked across France and boarded a ship for the United States, got to New York, and there the bishop, one Bishop Du Bois, was delighted to see him because they were very short of priests who could speak German for the many new German immigrants coming in. After he was ordained at about the age of 25, he was sent to the area of Buffalo, New York, and chose the more difficult rural ministry to parishes separated by as much as 50 miles. Living at the best in log cabins, hardly ever lighting a fire, even in the cold winters, living mostly on bread and cheese, and they say having only one pair of boots from the time he arrived in the country until the time he died. He was noted for giving away most of the gifts he got. When people would give him a new set of vestments, he would give them to newly ordained priests so they would have vestments. After about 5 years of ministry in the Diocese of Buffalo, he felt the need of more support than he was getting, and so he joined the Redemptorists, a German order that had just come from Germany to minister in New York and whose spirituality he could identify with. After a year of a largely self-taught novitiate, because his so-called novice master was on the road most of the time himself, he made profession and resumed his pastoral ministry, ending up as the rector of a large parish in Pittsburgh. But after 6 years, he was appointed by Rome as superior to the Redemptorists in the United States. And I think this had something to do with the fact that they caught on to the fact that he was something of an organizational genius, as well as being an intellectual genius. He was noted as a builder. 5 years after he was appointed Superior of the Redemptorists, Rome appointed him Bishop of Philadelphia. In the 6 years he was Bishop of Philadelphia, he built about 50 churches. That's an average of one church a month. At the same time, he built 200 Catholic schools. At the beginning of his time as bishop, there were 500 students in Catholic schools. When he died 6 years later, there were 9,000 students in Catholic schools. John Neumann was convinced that Catholics in a country which was predominantly Protestant were being influenced by Protestant theology in their schools, so he felt that Catholic education was necessary and, in fact, established the first Catholic school system in the United States. In his spare time, he wrote newspaper articles for public as well as Catholic publications, wrote two catechisms, theological works in German, and was a respected voice at the first Council of Baltimore when he was just ordained or consecrated a bishop. And at the age of 49, after suffering from tuberculosis, among other things, he suffered a stroke and died. The first reading today from the letter of John tells us, this is the message you heard from the beginning, that we should love one another. I ask you, how can God's love survive in one who has enough of this world's good, yet closes his heart to his brother when he sees him in need? Can anything good come from Nazareth or Bohemia or Mexico? Well, in John Neumann, we have an example of the much great good that has come to us in this country from many other countries. And in this day and age, I think we ought to be aware that the Catholic Church especially is urging people in our country to be open to the many gifts that God brings us when he brings us people from other places, people gifted in their own ways, to contribute to the welfare of the church, yes, but to the nation as well.